Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Guys, not allowed. Nah, I'm just kidding.
What time is it?
My mentality was to go out and win at any cost.
Jordan is the most talented player in the NBA by far.
The show of the 90s, the team of the 90s.
How you doing?
Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen.
We created an image that people want to live up to. I think that's all you can hope for.
G-U-Y. Can I have this dance?
Yeah.
I know you never danced with a man like me before. Won't you dance with me? You never wanna dance no more. Show you.
I like to think that I'm the only one she sees when her dancing, when we're out on the floor. I like to think that she'll be coming home.
And welcome, or should I say, and now it is time for the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with the major network. We are back. Hope everybody is safe during these trying times. We got a fun show for you guys and girls this week. We're going to talk about the two most watched shows of the weekend for vastly different reasons. But before we get into that, of course, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you know, my co-host is out there in Southern California, and I know, you know, they even more strict with the lockdown and whatnot on that side of the country than they are here in Virginia. So I had to put out an APB for a light, tall, light-skinned brother with dimples wearing a black Kangol sweatsuit, gold chain and sneakers, last seen on Farmers Boulevard headed east, a.k.a. alias Brother Lightskin. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for my tag team partner, Marcus. Organizations win championships, Vandenberg. What's good, man?
I'm guessing the state of Virginia falls closer to Florida rules than California rules when it comes to lockdowns.
We're somewhere in the middle. Like, our governor is, because Virginia's like a deep purple state. Like, it's maybe as purple as you can get. I might have to ask Chris next time we do a 22 and twin, like what are the most red states, the most blue states, and go down the spectrum. But like the governor came out real quick, like maybe 2 weeks after everything started, shut down school for the rest of the year, was like only essential workers need to be at work. Don't be hoarding stuff out here, you know, at these grocery stores. If you got to go out, wear a mask and, you know, use hand sanitizer. So he's letting people do stuff, but he's not letting people be stupid like they are in other parts of the country, Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to not justify the beach stuff, but trying to think of what was the reasoning behind opening the beaches up, and I got nothing. I mean, he did say, like, you're not supposed to be even sitting down. You're supposed to just be using the beach as, like, I guess, a park. But why not just open the parks up and just have people go to the parks? Like,
right. Like, if you open the beach, you're just asking for people to come to the beach.
Yeah, and then, like, there's certain times of day you can be on the beach. Like, it's, like, from 5 to 8 in the evening, and I think there's a morning window as well.
Yeah.
So, it's, like, if you're going to open the beaches. Don't have, like, these three-hour blots of people, you know, coming and going, so.
I mean, who do these beaches think they are? They're not the WWE. They're not essential.
Yeah. We won't talk about that.
Your boy Vince still out there getting that bag.
Allegedly.
That's all we gonna say, because we don't want to you know stir up the pot too much.
No.
Marcus is gonna be like, whatever you say. If you get jammed up, don't mention my name. Oh, but let's talk about something, Marcus. That's a little bit more uplifting. In a way, than our current state of affairs in America. And that is the biggest presentation, the biggest documentary, the biggest special of 2020 that's been brought to us early. And that is, of course, ESPN's The Last Dance, which I didn't know until today, listening to Dan Lebatard. Like, I thought it was just the ESPN deal, but I guess it's on Netflix, too.
Yes, it's on. Well, that's how Canada's going to watch, and that's how John Pollock is watching this morning, is he's watching via Netflix. So I'm going to assume once this is all done in the States that it'll also be on Netflix as well.
Okay. So yeah, this is a 10-part documentary series covering the 97-98 Bulls on their final championship season. Who's the director, Marcus? I'm blanking.
Jason Hare. I think that's how you pronounce his last name.
Yes. Yep.
Who also did Andre the Giant. He did... Yep. Fab Five, he's done the Bears one, so he's done quite a few projects, but this, I think, is his biggest 30 for 30 project to date, by far.
Yeah, this will be his OJ Made in America.
Yes.
This is, I saw somebody put this on Twitter the other day, and it just made me laugh. They were like, for all the black people that criticize white folks for acting a fool over Tiger King, now the shoe's on the other foot with The Last Dance, because we about to be out here losing our damn minds over this Michael Jordan movie.
Yeah, there was a lot of buzz last night, and I was hoping that this lived up to the hype. But after the first two, it feels like people were pretty satisfied with the direction of the documentary.
Yes, and so this is going to be a five-week series, I guess.
5-week series, 10-part documentary.
So every Sunday they're going to drop two parts.
Yep, and so I think it's May 17th, I want to say. Yeah, May 17th is the last two. So
how crazy would it be if once the documentary is over, like, everything was all good with coronavirus? Like, Jordan even beat Corona. You can't tell me Michael ain't the GOAT.
NBA's back in May. Yeah, that'd be something, but unlikely.
Yes, unlikely. Yes, keep staying inside. Keep washing your hands, people.
Yes.
So yeah, Marcus. What were your early impressions of this? Because yeah, they gave us the first two parts last night. Episode one was pretty much, you know, kind of setting up the players for this film in Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson, Jerry Krause, and Jerry Reinsdorf for the Bulls, the front office, the owner and the GM, and just kind of establishing the tension, and then it went into the backstory on Michael Jordan. In episode two, we got more of the tension between the Bulls players and management, and then it was like the Scottie Pippen story. And it looks like, at least for the first couple episodes, they're going to be doing that, kind of telling the story of the team as a whole, but then focusing on a key player or a key figure in Phil Jackson's case. I would assume Phil's probably got an episode coming up.
Yeah, full disclosure, I've seen the first eight already. And you are correct on the sort of, you know, the episodes focusing on specific people. So episode three will be a Rodman focus.
Yes, they've already started airing ads for that.
Episode four is Phil Jackson.
Tell me we get into Tony Kukoc episode, Marcus.
We are diving into Tony Kukoc because there's a lot I did not know about Tony Kukoc and what Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen felt towards Tony Kukoc, including their 92 Summer Olympics showdown where, yeah. So there's a lot I learned out of that episode. But yeah, Kukoc is focused and I've seen up into Chapter 8, and Chapter 8 ends during the 98 Eastern Conference, going into the Eastern Conference Finals against Indiana.
Okay.
So that's where it ends. So we're not, I didn't see like so any of the flu, you would the assume flu shot episode, or the flu episodes and all that stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would assume episode 9 is the actual NBA Finals, and then 10 is kind of probably the wrap-up of everything.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, because everything is, you know, everything has, for the timeline, it's gone up into 98 and backwards. It has not gone ahead past 98, but there's so much, I mean, not so much, but there's a chapter at least of Jordan after 98 in terms of the second retirement, the third comeback, his time with the Wizards in the front office and on the court, ownership with the, you know, with the Hornets, so. I don't think they go that deep into it, but there's definitely, you know, there's enough there if they wanted to. What I do want to see, though, before we talk about one and two, is do we get 5 minutes on Rodman Carmalone? This was during that time. Yeah.
I think we at least get a mention of it. Like, maybe they give us some footage, but I don't know if they'll give us a full five on it.
I hope so.
They have to mention it.
They have to at some point.
It was so big. Like, legitimate sports outlets were talking about Dennis Rodman taking off in the middle of the finals and Karl Malone to film this angle.
Was Hard Wild 98 the match with the time? Was that the time for Malone Rodman? Or was it 99? Let's see.
Because they did the tag match and then they went to the singles
Wild,
match.
Not Hard Wild.
Yeah, it used to be Hog Wild, but then they got sued by Harley Davidson.
That's right. That's right.
Eric Bischoff was like, I don't need those problems.
Oh, it's
I don't need those problems for a free show that I'm not charging people tickets for.
Yeah, so 99 was Savage Rodman.
Okay.
The singles match. So, yeah, maybe we won't get that.
Yeah, like I think we might get a mention, like when they, because we're gonna get the Dennis Rodman montage of the gambling and the drinking and the carousing and somebody will probably throw in a wrestling mention, but I doubt we'll actually focus on that.
Yeah,
because they didn't even really focus on that during the Rodman 30 for 30. Not that much.
No, they didn't. Mm-mm.
Like they talked about it, but it wasn't this big in-depth thing. Like, maybe that's something for the WWE Network to do.
Well, they have the special up now. I haven't seen it yet, but it's, there is a Rodman.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this new?
It's pretty new, like within the last week or so.
Okay.
I have not watched it yet, but yeah, there's something up
there. I don't know if they, do you think they rushed that because they knew Last Dance was getting pushed up?
Yes, I think so.
Vince is like, get that money.
Well, someone had to tell Vince, there's...
Yes.
There's this guy named Michael Jordan.
Who?
He plays basketball. Basketball is a sport involving a basket and a hoop.
Oh, you mean Shaquille O'Neal.
And a hoop. Yeah.
Like, no, Vince, not Shaq. Who is it? That's the only one I know, Shaquille O'Neal.
It's an untold episode of Rodman and Malone, so maybe I'll watch that today.
Like, no, he's small. He's a point guard. Oh, you mean like that LeVar Ball fella? Oh, that's how sad it is, Marcus. I'm starting to miss LeVar Ball.
No, you don't.
That's the state of affairs that we're in. I'm like, you know what? I would like to see LeVar Ball pop up on First Take.
How has nobody interviewed LeVar Ball about coronavirus yet? I'm sure he has some thoughts.
I'll tell you how we can solve it. I've never been sick.
Never lost.
Never lost.
Never ill.
Back to The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2.
Yes, yes. I thought it was a good intro into what the documentary is trying to accomplish. I don't think it was slow, but I just think it was sort of methodical in what it was trying to do.
Okay, real quick, let me ask you that on that point though, Marcus, because that might have been my only criticism of the two episodes, particularly the first episode, is that it felt like they had to do a lot of homework for people that don't know about Jordan, that don't know about the Bulls. And so if you know about this stuff, or if you know were alive when all this stuff was happening, it's like, yeah, let's go. But I guess Levitard's seen the eight episodes that are done, and he's like, the first two are the slowest and it picks up from there. Is that your opinion from watching the eight that have been done so far?
Yeah, that's my opinion. I think there is episode 6, which I thought was pretty slow in the middle there. But besides that one, yeah, I think 3 and 4 are definitely going to be focused around the piston stuff. And I think it does sort of pick up. It also includes the shot, which was in 89. Which leads to a funny story from Ron Harper about that whole play. But I do think there are times, though, when you're going to see sort of scenes from 1 and 2 where it's sort of like it is sort of explaining Michael Jordan to an audience that might not know Michael Jordan or the Bulls. And I did think that was sort of the first maybe 10 minutes of episode 1 was sort of a overall primer of what the Bulls were and sort of their place within the NBA world. And then it started to dive into, well, we started with Jerry Krause, number one.
Yes. the top heel of the territory.
Yeah, Jerry Krause.
R.I.P.
Yeah, the GM of the Bulls for Michael's entire run. He was there almost 20 years. And, I think people who lived through the Jordan era might have remembered stuff here and there about Krause and the relationship with Jordan and Pippen and Phil, but this really opens up the conversation of like who this man was. And you gotta remember, look, Jerry Krause died 3 years ago, and while his voice and videos, you know, he's got interviews throughout this thing, he's got nothing to defend himself. And I do sort of feel bad for Jerry Krause because he's not alive to defend himself. And I think there are some moments in this, throughout this documentary, where it felt like Jordan and, you know, the people put it together are probably punching down when it came to Krause. So Krause and Reinsdorf, Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, is the two men responsible for sort of the breakup of the Bulls. Going into the last season, which is called The Last Dance, because, you know, Phil Jackson named it that because he knew that this was their last season together. They knew it. They knew it. Going into 97-98, they knew this was it. And there are a couple reasons for that. One, Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause were not seen that eye at all.
I had forgotten all about that, Marcus, because I remember the Scotty stuff. I remember the Michael stuff. I forgot, like, they had to almost beg Phil to come back for that last year.
Yeah, and Phil mentioned in the documentary that Jerry told him, it doesn't matter if you do 82-0, this is it. This is your last season. And that was the conversation. Yeah. You mentioned Pippen, who had issues with Krause surrounding his contract. Pippen had signed the 7-year, $18 million contract.
Your boy Scottie Pippen signed a 7-year deal for a magic cow and a handful of beans.
Yeah.
Why? Like, damn, Scottie.
Now, to be fair, Scottie's first 4 seasons, and I mean, this is a different time in the NBA. This was not a time where, you know, bench guys were making, you know, crazy money. Pippen was making under $1 million his first 4 seasons in the NBA. So at the time, if you're going into his fifth season, he signed his extension. I mean, I can see why he might have signed it, especially when you hear the Pippen bad story about how he was sort of taking care of his family. I think he had maybe, was it 10 siblings? He had a bunch of siblings.
11 brothers and sisters.
Yes, yeah. So he's got this large family that he's...
He was coming off of back issues, too. You're talking about a backstory. Like, so he was like, get the money now because it might not be there tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think where... And I think we see this more with football players than we do with basketball players. But football players will sign these deals and then they'll outplay their deals and think, okay, well, the team will sort of re-up and give me a new deal. And Reinsdorf told him, I guess, look, don't sign this deal. This is not a good deal. Pippen signs the deal. And then, of course, you know, he outplays the deal by far. And now he wants more money from management and the team, but I can't blame him, are like, no, like, you signed this deal. We're not going to give you this extension. Now, they did with Jordan. Jordan got a new deal, but it's Michael Jordan, so.
Yeah. That's my thing about that, the whole Scottie thing. Like, yes, he signed the contract, and he should honor the contract. But at the same time, man, like, it's not like management had their hands tied. They could have broke Scottie off if they wanted to.
They could have, but then why would you want to break off the guy who's openly mocking you? You know, it's like...
Touché!
I think if, you know, and maybe if Scotty had a better relationship with management,
yeah,
it would work out, but maybe it doesn't. And then maybe... Yo, it's just,
that's the thing I didn't know about Kraus, though, Marcus. Like, I was stunned when the revelation... Cause I've only seen Jerry Krause like sitting in like meetings and press conferences, and I'm not a man of enormous height, Marcus Vandenberg, but when I saw Jerry Krause out there on the practice court, and the first words, and again, Michael Jordan, I can see why he didn't want some of this footage to come out because Michael Jordan is out here just being as cold as he want to be. He's like, so are them pills you taking keeping you short or making you fat? I'm like, damn, MJ. You had to kill that man's whole family with one line.
Yeah.
like I can see, like, there's something about the way, not even talking about the way Jerry Krause acted, which, you know, you can have issues with. And I like thinking that the organization is bigger than the team. It's like, only so far. But like the way that dude looked, for him to be that strident with the players, is like that was a recipe a disaster, because it's one thing if somebody like Mark Cuban is going back and forth with the players, because there's at least a level of respect there. But they don't respect Jerry Krause. This dude, that didn't he come from the White Sox?
Yeah, he came. He was a baseball scout.
Yeah, you're like a baseball scout. They ain't worried about you, Jerry Krause.
Ryan sort of mentioned like Krause asked him for the job, and which I mean that feels like a follow-up segment of, like, is this how easy it was to get a job with the Bulls?
Yeah, just, like, did nobody want the job?
Yeah. So he got the
and
job.
To his credit, like you said, Marcus, to his credit, you could dislike the way he went about things, but he did help put together, like, everybody except for Jordan, because Jordan was there when he got the job, but everybody else he brought in.
Yeah, I think he does not get enough credit for constructing a team around Jordan. And look, that Pippen trade, I mean,
yeah,
the fact that he traded up with Seattle to acquire Pippen, that's, you know, that's stuff that I think if it was anyone else, he would be getting credit for making those moves. But it became like this ego thing between Jordan and Krause of who was responsible for the titles. And obviously it's a large, large reason is because of Jordan. But, you know, we saw with the Bulls, there was a stretch where they had Jordan and they weren't winning. And it wasn't until Krause was starting to make some of these deals that Jordan was finally sort of, and it wasn't like on paper, you know, I think when you look at the Bulls teams, especially the first run, like these teams are not stacked with household names. Like you obviously had Pippen with Jordan, but Bill Cartwright, Will Perdue, Bill Winnington, like these are not, you know, your super teams. And that's where I think Jordan and Phil Jackson don't get enough credit for sort of taking this roster and taking it to levels that we've never seen before. But a lot of that is because of Jerry Krause.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting, and I because I was listening to the after show with Jalen Jacoby on Sunday night, and it's like I think he had set up and arranged to try to talk to Krause during the pre-production for this thing, but then like you said, 3 years before it went into production, he's gone, or I guess a couple years before it went into production, he's gone, and so his voice is limited to archival footage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's limited to these clips from the TV. And so it's very easy to kind of portray him as the villain in this story, especially Marcus with your boy Reinsdorf. Like, I don't know how Reinsdorf is like, I haven't seen all 8 episodes, but from just the first, I mean all 10, but from just the first 2, I see Reinsdorf doing a lot of like jujitsu. Like, he's like, yeah, I had something to do with that, but it was all over here with Jerry. It was all over there with Krause.
Yeah, and that's where I think Ryan still took advantage of Krause not being here. And he was able to, I think, pass some of the buck on to Krause, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We should mention, so the majority of this footage is footage from the 97-98 season that was shot, and the entire season was filmed and documented, and then Jordan sat on the footage for 20 years. So this didn't get started really until 2016.
Mike knew that we was going in 2020, there was going to be a worldwide epidemic, a pandemic, Marcus. Michael knew he was going to be needed for such a time as this.
Or Mike saw LeBron win and was like, "All right, let's open up the vault."
He called Adam Silver on the hotline. Yeah, go ahead and drop that.
Yeah. So it took about 3 years to put it all together. So yeah, Jerry Krause is sort of the intro. And then we dive into Jordan's time at UNC in college. And, you know, the first shot in 1982 where he beat Georgetown to win the national title. And Jordan gets drafted 3. In the NBA draft, Akeem won 2, Sam Bowie, which
I'm glad
I'm glad they moved on and didn't make a whole scene out of Sam Bowie and just sort of let that be. that leads us into the 84 rookie season where Jordan tells this great story about his first time getting exposed to
Okay, hold on, Marcus. Before you talk about this, because this is one of the best stories in night one. For the people that haven't seen the documentary, and if mm-hmm. you haven't, definitely go and check out the first 2 episodes. But explain to them how our hero, the GOAT, Michael Jordan, is positioned in this documentary, the environment that he's being interviewed in, and what may or may not be in his glass.
Jordan is sitting down somewhere on a beach, it looks like, in a house. He's got his eyes, I would consider to be a little bloodshot. Mm. And he's got what appears to be a glass of tequila with him.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's got like the skinniest cigar, and then the glass keeps going up and down. So it's not a prop.
No, it's not a prop. It was in use. It was active.
But yeah, so yeah, Mike is, and I think this is the story when he tells the story you about to bring up, Marcus, where I think he's at his most lit because he just starts laughing out of the blue.
Yes,
and I'm like, yeah, like this is a Michael Jordan you don't see often.
Yes. So Sam Smith, who wrote the Jordan Rules, I don't think this line was in the Jordan Rules. It might have been afterwards, but Sam Smith mentioned that the name for the Bulls back in the 80s were the Bulls Traveling Cocaine Circus. And Jordan was not aware of the story, and the director – tells Jordan, and Jordan just starts cracking up at this. And the director goes, "Well, is it true?" And he was like, "Well," and then he starts telling this whole story about his rookie season. They're in Peoria, Illinois, and at a hotel, and Jordan sort of trying to figure out where his teammates are, and he's knocking around rooms, and he comes across one room, and you know, guy behind the door says, "Who is it?" And you know, Jordan says, "Hey, it's MJ," and they let him in, and he said the whole team was in the room, and there are things that he'd never seen in his life before. He said there are lines over here, weed over here, women over here. And Jordan, who was probably 21 at the time, was, I think this was really his first, this is what he says, his first exposure to sort of some of this behavior. And he decided to just leave at that point. He was sort of on his own. I mean, he was sort of, at least at the time, isolated from the rest of the team because of this.
Yo, that might be the real reason why it took so long for them to drop this documentary, Marcus, because all the players who were involved with the cocaine circus, like, they needed to get their story straight for when their wives saw this.
Well, there's at least two players that are dead from that team. Orlando Rurich.
Yep.
Who was part of that team. And then Quentin Daly. When did he die? There was one cutaway to a player from the team. Quentin Daly died in 2010. They did cut to Rod Higgins, who did not mention or confirm or deny anything with that story. But, yeah, unfortunately, there were a couple of deaths from that 83-84 team. So,
given the way we see it with wrestlers, like, you live a hard lifestyle, eventually it catches up to you.
Yeah, there was some hard living going on.
I think this was the part where I got back on board. Not that I ever got off board with the documentary, Marcus, but like you said, like, a lot of the college stuff, if you don't know about Jordan, it's interesting. But if like you and me and people that listen to this show, probably, we know all about the shot. We know all about Jordan Worthy. And the only person that could stop Michael Jordan in college was Dean Smith. Like, we know all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was watching it, but at the same time, I wasn't invested in it. But then when they got to – when Michael's talking about the cocaine circus, I'm back on board. I'm back in. And then, like, I think the – I like the second episode a little bit better. And it might be because I knew less about Scotty than I did about Michael. So with Michael, it felt like a review. It felt like a rehash. With Scotty, it was like, oh, I didn't know all this stuff about Scotty Pippen before.
Yeah, I mean, this was sort of being advertised like as the Michael Jordan documentary, but it's much more than that. It's more so the 97-98 Bulls and the players involved. I mean, obviously Jordan's the focus, but it's more than just Jordan's story. So.
Which is better for, like, honestly, as much as I love Jordan, like, I'm more interested in the stories of what's going on with Phil, what's going on with Rodman, like, Kukoc, like, people sleep on Tony Kukoc, like, what was Tony Kukoc like in the midst of all this drama? So, yes, obviously Jordan is the headliner, but the more interesting stories might be with the guys that didn't get all the headlines.
Mm-hmm. So, episode one wraps up around sort of. There's two timelines in this, and that the two timelines is going to be consistent throughout the documentary.
Okay, so yeah, I was going to ask you, because that's the theme. Like, they do kind of like this rewind, fast-forward gimmick where something happens in 98, and then we'll go back to 88. Or, we'll, you know, something happens in 97, and we'll go back to 82 and then pick up from the story from there and then fast-forward back. So, like, I like the gimmick. It didn't feel out of place. It didn't feel intrusive. After eight episodes, how does that gimmick work for you?
It worked. I mean, at times I feel like it's trying to do too much as a documentary, and maybe that's because there are 10 episodes and they're trying to fill it. But
right.
I could see why. I could see if people thought it was a little jarring or confusing. I could understand why, because it does sort of skip around, and sometimes it'll skip to 91, sometimes it'll skip to 1968. So it's just like, there's no rhyme or reason, really.
It's like, this is what you're saying is, this is not Ken Burns baseball, where everything is in a sequential order.
Yeah, not that. So,
although that would be great, though. Like, if Ken Burns, I mean, your man, I keep forgetting his name, that directed this one.
Jason Harris.
He did a good job. Yeah, Jason. Jason did a good job with this so far. But, like, imagine Ken Burns' version of The Last Dance, where you're getting, like, Phil Jackson reading old letters. Like, my dearest Jeannie, times are hard out here in Chicago. I got into another argument with General Krause. I don't know if I'm long for this team. I just went to the Civil War because I thought I was going to go to the baseball one. Baseball is a great documentary, but I think I like Civil War better, just because you get those reenactments of people reading old letters from dead soldiers.
Yes.
Just, my dearest Clementine, I fought with a unit of darkies today, and despite what you may have heard, they are gentlemen. back to The Last Dance. Back to The Last Dance.
So the second episode.
Yes.
Starts off with Jerry Krause again. And then we dive into the Scottie Pippen portion of the documentary.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they bring up the fact that he was the 122nd highest paid player in the NBA. He was sixth on the Bulls.
Mm. Luke Longley made more money than Scottie Pippen. Luke Longley.
Yes, think about that. Jordan calls him his best teammate of all time and says whenever they speak Michael Jordan's name, they should also speak Scottie Pippen, which I thought was revealing. And then we go into Pippen's sort of childhood and his time in college. Yeah.
Billy Pippen, his big brother?
Yes.
Yeah, Billy Pippen shows up, who looks exactly like Scottie Pippen, just dark skin. Which was, it kind of weirded me out for a little bit, Marcus. Like, this palette swap Scottie Pippen.
Pippen, who started in college at 6'1", 155. He grew 5 inches over the summer and filled out to be what he became, which was a 6'7" forward. But
we never get summers like that, Marcus? Like, every basketball story I hear is like
Jordan had one too. Jordan had one.
Jordan was 6'1", and then he came back the next summer. He was 6'4", 6'5". Like, how come I never had a summer where I grew 5-6 inches at one time, Marcus Vandenberg?
Yeah. you know, just, I would take 2 inches coming back from somewhere.
Right. But the more we going through this story on Jerry Krause's side, team short brothers, I'm representing.
Krause was 5'6", so
that's crazy because he looks so much shorter because he's standing next to all these giants, and it doesn't, again, it doesn't help that he's like overweight. So it's like, I'm 5'6", Marcus Vandenberg. I got a belly. I could be Jerry Krause. I empathize with that man. Jerry Krause is now the hero. This is the Last Dance, the Jerry Krause story.
When they first showed Krause sort of coming out of the practice facility and getting into his car, I got Newman vibes from him. He looked like Newman coming out.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, snap, Marcus. Hold on. Time out. Michael Jordan's other movie, Space Jam.
Oh, yes. That this came up last night on Twitter.
The sidekick, the assistant, was played by my man that played Newman on Seinfeld. Do you think that was a shot at Jerry Krause?
Yes.
Because he worked for a baseball team.
Yep.
Damn. Yeah, Jordan is petty.
Yeah, you look at the cartoon image of him.
What's that guy's name?
You compared to Krause.
Let me look up Newman's actor, because he looks... Google my man Newman from Seinfeld. He looks just like this dude. But yeah, like, I thought he was like extremely short, like under 5 foot, just the way he looked in that opening scene with Jordan's joking on him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, he's just a regular sized dude, like maybe a little below average, but he's not like a dwarf. He's not hornswoggle out here on these streets. Newman was played by Wayne Knight.
Yes.
So yeah, that's crazy, Mark. It's like my man had a whole subliminal diss to Jerry Krause in the middle of Space Jam.
Oh no, not. It's not Newman's character. There's another character in Space Jam that I'll find the image for you.
Because Newman was like he was the assistant for the minor league team. In the movie, it was like he was always Michael's got to be here. Michael's got to be at this function.
Yeah, he was MJ's assistant, but I think there's another guy. Yes. That was. I'll dig it up.
There was another shot at was another Jerry Krause.
Yeah.
Oh, was it the dude that runs the Monstars team?
Yeah, Swag Hammer.
Swag Hammer, played by Danny DeVito.
Yes, which wow. I mean, made sense. Similar body types.
I don't care about you, Monstars. The organization wins the championship.
Yeah. I think that was a shot at Krause.
Damn. Well, yeah. I mean, you can read both of them as shots. Like, mm-hmm. MJ just petty. I'm sure you can respect that, Marcus.
I respect it.
Took time out of this major motion picture to throw shots.
Hall of Famer. Hall of Fame petty.
But back to a Hall of Famer, Scottie Pippen, Marcus. I think I enjoyed episode 2 a little bit better. Again, just because I didn't know as much about Scottie, but then also it felt like the storylines were starting to fall into place where it's not just Michael that has an issue with management. Now it's Scottie that's got this issue with management. And the fact that not only is there an issue between Scottie and the management, but when we get to the part where Scottie decides to have his surgery right before the season because he didn't want to F up his summer, which is one of the greatest quotes in the documentary so far, you get the friction between Michael and Scottie because Michael's like, current day Michael, you know, Michael sipping on that yak is like, that was selfish and Scottie shouldn't have did that.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen this before. I think it was Shaq who had the line about getting surgery on company time, essentially.
Yeah. If I'm gonna be out, I'm gonna be out on company time.
Yeah. I can see where MJ and Phil Jackson are both coming from, because Phil essentially defended Scottie and said, "Look, I understand he was trying to make a point to management, but also if you're Jordan, you also know this." All this pressure now is on you to especially yeah. when you're coming off of back-to-back championships, you have 5 titles, you know, this is the last season and you know, coming in that you're not going to have your second best player for a good portion of that. Yeah. I understand why he was pissed.
I think the only thing that was missing for me, maybe in these first 2 episodes, Marcus, is not enough Phil, but as you said, like we get a Phil episode in episode 4. So like I could have used more Phil Jackson in the first 2.
Just his thoughts on everything or.
Yeah. Cause we get like the beat where, and I didn't even know, like I knew about the players having issues with management. I didn't know that Phil was given like this ultimatum. And so like, I would have liked to have heard Phil's thoughts on what was going on to set up this season. But again, like this is a 10-part thing. I think that's what I had to remember at the end of it. At the end of episode 2, I was like, okay, that was cool. But there's so much more that I want to hear. And it's like, if you look at this as one 90-minute movie, all 10 parts as one 90-minute movie, we're only 20 minutes in, mm-hmm. basically, you know, 15, 20 minutes into the movie. And so it's like, they're going to get us there. Like the first 2 episodes were really solid. And having seen all, or having seen 8 up to this point, Marcus, would you say that people's first impressions hold throughout, as in Jerry Krause is the villain here in this story? And like, I saw a lot of sympathy online today for Scottie Pippen and his plight. You know, does the do the roles kind of change throughout the course of these 8 episodes?
I think definitely people won't ride with Jerry Krause, which I get. I was surprised at the Pippin love last night. I thought Pippin, I don't want to call him selfish, but I understand where MJ was coming from, that, you know, he put himself ahead of the team. And
yeah,
I feel like if that were to happen today with a, you know, let's just say a current player, I don't think they would get the same sort of...
Skip Bayless would be killing him.
Yeah. But I think because people were introduced to the fact that Pippen wasn't making any money at the time, then he became like the sympathetic figure. Let's not forget Pippen went back to Chicago, and despite what you're going to hear through the rest of the series about Pippen and his thoughts on management, he ended up back in Chicago playing for Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause, who was still there.
Didn't he eventually become an executive with the team or something like that?
Yep,
or a liaison or something like that?
He got fired, he said, this season. He announced that last week. So, yeah, he's always had this connection to the Bulls, despite, you know, what he's going to say in the documentary.
Which makes sense, because don't nobody want to remember Scottie Pippen with the Rockets. Scottie don't even want to remember that.
No, and that's where Scottie made his money. So, yeah, I was surprised at the Pippen love. I think Pippen... I did not come away from this scene thinking that Pippen came off as the best, but that was just
me. Okay. I'll talk on that Scotty point real quick, but then I got to ask you, because that leads me to a follow-up. But on Scotty, how did you feel about Scotty when he was active? Because I always respected Scotty as a player, like obviously one of the 50 best players of all time. But as a dude, I've never been in the Scotty Pippen camp. Like getting the surgery before the season, or when he decided not to go in the game because Phil called to play for Ku Coach. And that was the year Jordan had taken a break to go play baseball, right?
Yes, and they do talk about that in the documentary.
Yeah, like I thought that was like, come on, you're supposed to be the team leader. You're supposed to be about winning. Like, I didn't like Scotty off of that.
And I think that's where the Pippen love will sort of, I think, flip, because they do dive into that. And if I remember correctly, Pippen, spoiler alert, would have done the same thing. He would have, if he had a chance to do it over again, he would have acted the way he did. So I think that's where we'll see the, where we'll see the Pippen, the Pippen love in. That's chapter 7.
Okay. Oh, so chapter 7. Is that the Kukoc chapter?
yes. And that's another thing too. That's where between Pippen refusing to play and then Pippen and Jordan go after Kukoc, I think that's where we'll see the flip of Pippen.
Okay, so yeah, episode 7. I'm going to have to circle that on the calendar.
Yes.
the Scotty heel turn. But you talk about Scotty coming off well. And the main question, Marcus, because before this documentary even came out this past weekend, the big headline was Jordan was worried about how this was going to make him look. So after watching 8 episodes of this, does Jordan come off as a bully? Does he come off as disrespectful? Does he come off as likable? Like, what do you think now of Michael Jordan, this player that, you know, you and me and most in our generation have kind of looked up to and respected all these years?
I think they do a good job of trying to capture Jordan's sort of human side of, like, he at times he felt like John Cena, in the sense of, like, he would try to do the right things when it came to, you know, like make a wish or trying to request, you know, or trying to grant the request of kids before and after games. So there is that sort of footage that is in there. But at the same time, I think he does come off as a bully. You know, I think, you know, I mentioned the stuff with Krause, I think is, you know, probably not the best.
We get to see him punch Steve Kerr.
they don't have footage of it, but they do talk about the Steve Kerr fight. They don't talk about the Will Perdue fight, though.
Will Perdue. There's going to be so many random bulls that are going to be getting appearances off of this documentary.
Oh, they're a Bushler. They're all in there. Bushler, Winnington.
Stacey King.
No Stacey King.
No Stacey King. Oh. What I'm about surprised. Craig Hodges? Is Craig Hodges in the documentary?
No Craig Hodges.
Because he was part of the first three.
Yes.
BJ Armstrong.
BJ's in here. BJ, who's now an agent. BJ looks good. BJ looks like he's still like 32.
I'm saying he looked like a kid when he was playing.
Yeah, he still looks like a kid.
Ron Harper.
Harper is in it for, I think, just his Cavaliers story. You do get Horace Grant, and
okay,
there's a Horace Grant becomes part of the story later on, between him and Jordan. Kerr, Patson,
yep.
Jed Bushler, Cartwright's in it.
Bill Cartwright.
Cartwright looks really old, man. Cartwright looks like someone's grandfather.
Again, like he's the opposite of BJ Armstrong. Cartwright yes. looked 50 when he was playing.
He did. So yeah, you get all of the you get all of the bulls you would imagine, and then obviously we had David Stern in the first one, RIP. We get Kobe Bryant, and that is episode 5.
Okay.
And
that's
gonna
be interesting.
Yeah, that was filmed, I think, a week before his death. So,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Kobe's episode, the first, I would say, 10 minutes or so is focused on Kobe and MJ, including interviews from stuff in January. So that part's going to be good and probably.
Do you think they recut that after Kobe passed?
No. In terms of recut, as in what,
as in giving more, because you said like the first 10 minutes kind of focuses on that relationship. Do you think they maybe added more than was already in there?
No, it sort of flows with the story.
Okay.
The Kobe stuff is around the All-Star game in 98, which in terms of the timeline of the documentary, it works out. So yeah, no, I don't think that was sort of enhanced or, you know, added focus. I just think they, in a way, got lucky in the sense of that they got to talk to Kobe before he died and included it. So,
do they dive into any of the minor league stuff?
They do.
With Michael.
They talk baseball. Not a whole bunch on the baseball stuff. That is not until I think chapter 7. They do interview Terry Francona, who managed Michael in Birmingham, who's now the Indians manager. And I think Reinsdorf was the one who said, or no, it was Tito. Francona said that if Jordan had 1,500 at-bats in the minors, he believes he could have made the majors. He just, you know, I think Jordan's biggest thing was he just needed more at-bats, and what ultimately killed his baseball career was the fact that the baseball strike took place in 95 and Jordan refused to cross the picket line. And with baseball on hold, he decided to, you know, go back to the NBA. So
people sleep like there's another 30 for 30 about the, it's Jordan Rides the Bus.
Mm-hmm.
With Jordan with the Birmingham Barons, and like people joke like it's funny to talk about Michael Jordan's baseball career, but like if you actually look at it, like this dude that ain't played baseball since high school and he's grown about 5 inches since then, like he was actually decent for what he was at that time.
Started the season on a 13 game hitting streak.
Yep, he stole 20-30 bases, something
30
like that.
Bases. The only reason why he went to AA is because I think Ryan sort of said the media concerns that rookie ball and A ball couldn't handle the media in terms of the ballparks. So they essentially had to send him to a level that probably was, you know, too high for him in AA.
Yeah.
And yeah, he did not ultimately do too well. I think he hit just a little over 200. I would you know, it's, I think it's a fun debate to see who had the better season, Tebow or MJ and the Miners. But
that's an all-star outfield right there. Tebow, Jordan. We got to find one more. Who else tried minor league baseball and didn't last?
Who else tried it? I mean, you could add someone who actually did well, like a Dion or.
Oh, who's on my man? They played for the Falcons too.
Brian Jordan.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Word. So okay. So now we got to put Tebow in center, so that way we can have Jordan and Jordan.
There you go.
Brian Jordan in right, Michael Jordan in left, Tebow in center. That's a murderer's row.
It's a murder or something.
Like, why is Brian Jordan covering the entire outfield? Oh, Tebow. The other thing I really liked about the first couple of nights, Marcus, and I'm wondering if it continues throughout the documentary, is the use of like music to let you know what time period you're in. Because the documentary starts with Puffy and Mace, Been Around the World.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good music cues. I think my favorite one, and I tweeted about it and actually got retweeted by Vivica Fox. Yes, Vivica Fox retweeted me last night. So I guess last night was my Independence Day, Marcus Vandenberg. Because I talked about it because it was during the section of episode 2, I think, when they were talking about the 63-point game against Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And like, because they tell that great story about Michael Jordan and Danny Ainge playing golf.
Yes.
In the off day during the series. And then he's like, I got something for your boy DJ tomorrow night. And they're like, Larry Bird's like, I don't know what got into Michael, but it was something crazy. And then Danny Ainge is like, we never saw anything like this. And then Michael just, they go to the actual game footage, and all of a sudden they start playing LL Cool J's I'm Bad.
Yes.
And it's like, a minute and a half, 2 minutes of Jordan highlights set to LL Cool J, and I was like, "Oh, this is perfect." And I used the Simpsons when Carl's doing like the chef kiss,
mm-hmm.
and Vivica Fox retweeted because I guess she was all about the documentary. Like, if you go to Vivica Fox's timeline, it's like the last day is like 90% Last Dance tweets.
Oh, all right.
But does the music? Is the music used like that throughout the documentary?
Yes, it is. It is. I'm trying to think if it's syncs up where the music is from the actual time the documentary is hitting on. But yeah, there's definitely other music sort of tracks.
I think he said he tried to get the exact year on the after show with Jalen and Jacoby, but if he couldn't get the exact year, he got something that was at least of the era.
Okay.
But yeah, I thought the music was really well done, particularly that scene with him. And people forget, like, I think people have kind of rewritten history that the Bulls actually won that game, but people forget the Celtics won that
Celtics
game. Won.
Celtics swept the Bulls, yeah. Today is the anniversary of the Game 2 performance for Jordan, the 63. So yeah, they lost in double overtime and they lost the series. And I mean, to be honest, they had no business being in the playoffs, to be honest. Like 30-52 shouldn't get you a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And that's where the Bulls were that season.
And this was coming off of Jordan's injury, which kept them out for a big chunk of the season.
Yes, and that was one of the other stories was management was about that tanked life early on,
yeah.
And did not want Jordan to play because A, he could have been re-injured, and B, they figured they're not going to win a title anyway, so why are we trying to win? And that was like, I think the first divide between Jordan and Krause, which that was Krause's first season on the job, which was Jordan's second season. And from that point on, I don't think Jordan respected him.
And we get out of that, we get the great story that Michael's telling about how Reinsdorf is like trying to explain, we playing the long game. Like we not focused on this one season. And Jordan's like, Reinsdorf says, if I gave you a bottle with 99 pills that'll cure your headache and one of them will kill you, would you take that chance? And MJ just sits there with his glass, and he's like, and I looked at Jerry, and I said, well, how bad is my effing headache?
Yes.
Which, again, like, I think this might be, other than actual playing Michael Jordan, this might be my favorite Jordan. Like, just drunk old man, doesn't really care anymore. Obviously lit, telling stories to his grandkids, and let me tell you about this time. And so, yeah, is this the Jordan we get through the whole thing? Is he this kind of open and candid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to get worse. I mean,
uh-oh.
it reminds me of Chappelle's Show. It reminds me of Rick James when they cut back between Rick James Charlie Murphy. Like, Jordan is playing Rick James in this documentary.
Oh, no. Like, why would I stomp on Jerry Krause's couch? Why would I do that? Yo, couch, Jerry!
Yeah.
Oh, no. So this is like, and I think Neil Brennan tweeted out. He's like, so is this just going to end up being Michael Jordan's drunk basketball history? I'm like, you know what? Maybe, and if so, I'm here for that, Marcus.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, this is a Jordan production. Ultimately, and
he did produce it.
Well, I mean, it's his footage. I think it's
yeah.
So
yeah,
you're not going to get
this isn't 100% accurate. I mean, yeah,
there are some James Jordan stories that are out there that you're not going to see in this documentary.
Well, that was gonna be another question. Like, do they touch on like the gambling allegations and stuff like that?
Yep, they do.
Oh, they do.
Uh huh.
Oh, because I thought he would steer clear of that.
No, they did talk gambling. They talked about the retirement and all that, you know, all the speculation about was he suspended. They talked about his dad's death.
Mm.
But that's where I feel like it's not going to be on the level as the OJ documentary, because the OJ documentary was not from the eyes of OJ. It was just...
Right.
Telling the story. So I don't think it's at that level, but it's, you know, it's probably right up. It's probably 1B to OJ's, you know, 1A.
Okay. I'm actually surprised that he actually talked. He addressed the gambling stuff, because I was like, Jordan ain't going to talk about that.
No, he talks about it. Yeah.
Okay, Mike. That liquor make them lips loose. Let me tell you another thing, Jason.
Yeah, he talks about that. But there's a lot of sort of petty MJ coming.
Does he talk about the Hall of Fame speech?
Not yet. We haven't got to that point yet. But
okay. Well, yeah.
You might not get it in this documentary.
Yeah. If we do get it, it'd probably be in the last episode where they do like the "Where's everybody now?" kind of deal.
Yeah. But then we saw. During, I think it was the first one where Dolores, Jordan's mom, was reading this letter from MJ.
There's a
great scene later on where Jordan is reacting to an interview that Gary Payton did about that NBA Finals, and just Jordan's reaction to what he was hearing Payton say about Jordan was just... There's gyms like that where it's just like, okay, like, you're just trying to goat an answer out of Jordan and just trying to get him to be petty. So there's a few scenes like that where, you know, it's either Jordan reacting to video or an interview, or another player that's reacting to a Jordan video and sort of getting their reaction.
Okay. Did they actually sit down with Kukoc, or just people talking?
No, it's Kukoc is in it.
Okay. Okay, because, yeah, I'm trying to think. I can't remember the last time I've seen, like, a Tony Kukoc interview. And, like, Tony Kukoc, I went through a phase, Marcus, where I was, like, all about the European ballers. Like, Arvydas Sabonis and Drazen Petrovic and Sarunas Marcellonis. And Tony Kukoc was, like, the best of all of them.
Yeah, I mean, Kukoc in today's NBA would have been a monster, because he's a 6'10 forward who could shoot, which...
I was going to say, like, he was kind of...
He's ahead of
his time. I don't know if this is a good comparison, but he was kind of proto-Porzingis, maybe? Or is he more Luka?
No, I don't think he has the ball handling of Luka. Or the true size of Kristaps and what he do defensively. So
he's somewhere in between. He's quicker than your man Porzingis, but he's not quite as skilled a ball handler as Doncic.
Yeah.
But for that, like, again, 6'10 at that time, like, wasn't too many 6'10 dudes that had that skill set. So, yeah, shout out to Tony Kukoc. And, like, he was, for Europe, he was their Jordan.
Oh, yeah, he was, I mean, he's at the time, he was Europe's best player. And if you think about that, sort of him coming over to the Bulls at the time were, you know, the best team in the world. It was a big deal when Kukoc came over.
And he was like their third, fourth. Like, depends on where you put Rodman, but I would put Kukoc as their third guy. After Jordan and Pippen.
I would put him fourth behind. Well, I just, once Rodman came to the Bulls, I would put him fourth. Because what Rodman did was, I mean, he was sort of the heart of that team.
He was Draymond Green.
Yes, he was.
Which, I guess, Marcus, leads us to the last question, which is, how much internet, social media BS do you think this documentary is going to stir up? Whether it's the Golden State Warriors Dub Nation, or the LeBron stands, or the Kobe stands, or you know, who... Like, how much nonsense are we going to have to endure for the next month, Marcus, between people beefing over who was really the greatest?
I'm surprised we didn't get any last night with the LeBron stands that were...
Oh, is LeBron in the documentary?
No.
Really?
He's not.
Wow, that's conspicuous.
And I did notice that LeBron did not tweet about the documentary last night either, which... Mm-hmm. What else is he doing at home? Mm-hmm. But yeah, no LeBron.
LeBron forbid anybody in his house to watch the documentary.
But I mean, it made sense because they're not commenting on anything outside of ahead of 98. So,
right,
that part I'm not too surprised about. But yeah, no LeBron mentions.
So there's no like Durant or like current players talking about that team.
No,
other than Kobe, who had the connection from 98.
Yeah, Kobe, who actually played against Jordan, so...
Okay, well, that makes more sense then, because I thought that, like, there'd be, like, Durant or Steph Curry talking about that team.
It's all people from the time, so yeah, no one...
Okay.
No one of today's game.
That feels like less of a slight then.
Yeah, no.
if Michael got everybody and was like, everybody but LeBron.
No. I mean, Kobe's the only semi-current guy
that
we really have in here, so... so yeah, episode 3 and 4 are going to...
So 3 is Rodman centric and 4 is Phil.
So yeah, 3 will hit on the Bulls Pistons rivalry.
Okay.
It'll hit on the shot, which was in 89 against Cleveland.
Ooh. Are they gonna get into Isaiah and Michael's beef?
Yes, they will.
That's what I'm here for.
Isaiah is interviewed for this, and if you want to watch Sad Isaiah
and talk about the dream team,
yep, that's now. If you know any Detroit Pistons fans next week, you might want to mute them now on your timeline, because they're gonna have some thoughts about the next two episodes. And then
do we hear from Magic in the documentary?
We do, yeah.
Because I can't remember, I'm trying to remember if he was in 1 or 2, and I can't remember seeing him.
He was briefly. Magic was talking about, I can't remember, but he was sort of focused a little bit in 1 of the 2. And then later on, he tells a story about the Strut game, which was 92.
Okay.
And how the night before he was hanging out with Jordan, and how that whole sort of game came about. So yeah, there's a great story. I don't spoil it here, but yeah, Magic's featured on that.
Okay, cool, yeah, because we've already seen, like, Larry, because Magic, I mean, Michael's really like the bridge, because we've got, like, the Larry, Magic, even Isaiah, if you want to put him in with those guys, mm-hmm. like the 80s guys, and then you've got the Kobe's and the LeBron's, and then Michael kind of held sway over the middle.
Yeah.
So, ooh, Barkley's got to be in this, right?
Barkley's in it, yeah, when they talk about the Sun series.
Say Barkley's got to have some great stories.
there wasn't a whole lot of Barkley, actually. It was just a little bit.
Huh. You'd think, like, just because he's so good on TV that you would use Barkley as much as you could.
I mean, the Sun series was... I mean, the Suns made it, I guess, they didn't get swept, but...
No.
It was not a memorable series.
I was going to say, it was hyped up going in, though, because I'm trying to remember back, because it was like, at that time, people were legitimately saying, like, Barkley was either two or three, but, like, he was in that top three mix.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, you had two of the best players in the world, and I think afterwards was when Barkley was like, you know, I never said nobody was ever better than me, but after that series, Michael Jordan is better than me.
That's what did Barkley.
It's not terrible. So I'm excited, Marcus. Like, I think from everything that I saw last night, and then like I've seen people that have seen the whole thing, or I've heard from people that have seen the whole thing, like you, Dan Lebatard, or some of the other media people, and it seems like this is going to be a fun. Not only is it going to be a fun documentary, maybe fun's the wrong word, but like an interesting documentary, but it's also something that without any live sports, all sports fans can kind of coalesce around right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's this is it. Well, NFL draft is this Thursday, which I forgot about.
The cyber draft.
Yeah, we got the virtual draft. And then once we get past the draft, May is looking pretty light in terms of what sports.
Did they already have the finals of that NBA horse contest yet?
Yeah, that's done. We're on to a Madden celebrity tournament that's starting this week.
Marcus, I hate to say it because this is not my brand. And also, you had that one dude just calling people niggas anytime he want to.
Mm-hmm.
But the NASCAR, the virtual NASCAR has kind of been fun.
Oh, it's great.
I actually like virtual NASCAR better than real NASCAR.
I do too. It's shorter.
Except for that one dude that said the N-word.
Kyle Larson, yeah.
It's like, between him and, I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, Marcus, between him and those wrestling students from that wrestling school in Georgia that did that stupid TikTok video, like, white people losing their minds right now.
Well, I mean, compare the reaction to Kyle Larson to Randy Orton.
Randy Orton.
He did the same thing.
Yeah.
No one cared.
I mean, can Kyle Larson do an RKO, though?
He has time to practice now.
Yes, he does. But yeah, like, to all our white brothers and sisters out there, quarantine is not the time to get your N-word on. It's not.
Don't say it. And don't do ER if you're going to say it.
Right.
Not the hard ER.
Not the hard ER. Like, because you might end up in the ER.
Yes.
But yeah, so I'm excited, Marcus, for the rest of this documentary. I think, like, this is a team that obviously you and I kind of grew up with, but it's going to be interesting seeing how, I guess, like, people 20, like the people around 20 and under, like the LeBron generation, like how they react to this, because obviously, that's always one of the debates, one of the barroom debates in terms of who's the greatest, who's on the Mount Rushmore of the NBA. But just watching this, if you've never seen Michael Jordan before, like that 63-point game, like this dude was the best. Like to me, he's the greatest of all time. To you, probably, he's the greatest of all time. Like LeBron's in the discussion, but, you know, it's Michael, then it's everybody else in whatever order you want to put him.
I mean, the fact that he wouldn't sit to know in the final, like, if he would have lost one of the final series, I'd say, you know what, maybe we didn't have a conversation, but the man went three-peat twice, like,
yeah.
What more do you want?
I said it last night, Marcus, and I don't want to hurt nobody's feelings out there listening. But to me, Michael Jordan was who everybody thinks Tom Brady is.
In terms of the rings?
In terms of not only the rings, but in terms of being this transcendent player. Mm-hmm. Like, Tom Brady's great. I'm not taking anything away from Tom Brady, but people talk about him like he revolutionized the game, right? Like, he changed the whole damn game. Michael Jordan actually changed the game, right?
Yeah.
The Dream Team, you know, the six championships, Nike, McDonald's, all Space Jam. Like, Jordan actually changed stuff in a way that I don't think Tom Brady, or anybody really for that matter, has.
Yeah, I agree.
Not since. So, yeah, you know, y'all can have Tom Brady, and I'm going to be over here in a Jordan jersey like Killmonger. Is this your king? let's go from me being petty, Marcus, to Babyface and Teddy.
I see what you did there.
But did you see what Teddy Riley and Babyface did there?
Unfortunately, I saw enough of it.
Disclosure, like, I didn't watch the whole thing. Like, I was aware of it when it was going on, and I'd pop in from here and there. But most of my opinion of what went down is from going back and watching it later and then seeing people's reactions, because people were losing their minds over this. And so, first of all, just on the idea of these battles, Marcus, I think it's a cool idea. Since we're all stuck inside, like, have these kind of legendary musical dream matches, but sometimes a match should just stay in a dream.
So it's a cool idea on paper. I'm waiting for someone to actually make it a legitimate sort of process, like develop a platform that can support this stuff.
Yep.
Give people a chance to vote in real time of who won each song. And then if you can do all that, you can actually create some type of tournament where
you have
different
people cool.
in different brackets. So last week we had RZA and DJ Premier.
Yep.
You could have essentially two separate sides of the bracket, one with rap, one of R&B, and then at the end you could have, let's say, DJ Premier versus Babyface, and even though
who's
they're two
the overall
different,
champion.
Yeah, who's the overall champ? Why hasn't someone developed this stuff? I mean, what else is going on in the world? Get on that.
That's actually a good idea. And there's probably a way that you could monetize it too. And like, whoever wins will donate money to this coronavirus charity.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a really good idea, Mark. Because I don't know why they haven't done that. Because to me, the biggest thing that has been a drawback from these competitions, quote unquote, is these are about music, right? Like, these are musical artists.
Yep.
Why they sound worse than us using Skype?
Yeah. So
like that's what you do. Like, you do audio and especially Teddy Riley. Like, why is your audio sounding so trash, sir?
I mean, that's when IG Live is not meant to handle all this. Like, you're relying on a phone to broadcast all this, and in the case of Teddy Riley, who was trying to essentially do a live performance at his house.
Teddy was trying to do too much, Marcus. Just
yeah.
Had the hype man and everything.
The ratings for Last Night are in.
Oh, for Last Dance?
Yes. Wow. This is way higher than I thought it would be.
Okay.
Episode 1 did 6.3 million. And episode 2 did 5.8 million.
Okay. So about 6 million for each show.
Yeah.
Each episode. That's crazy. Yeah, those are do you have any idea, or do you have the numbers on what the OJ did?
Not offhand, but this is a huge number for them.
I was going to say, this has got to be one of the highest things that ESPN's aired.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's a typical Monday Night Football rating?
Monday Night Football is low teens, high single digits. So not super close to Monday Night Football, but...
I was going to say, that's probably the only thing that I would see outgaining something like this is a big live sporting event.
Yeah, this says the premiere episodes ranked as the two most viewed original content broadcasts on ESPN Network since 2004, surpassing the 2012 film You Don't Know Bo, which hit 3.6 million. It's also the most viewed telecast on ESPN since the national championship game. And yeah, so this is
okay. So it's big. Number. So by that article, that means it's bigger than OJ.
Sounds like it, yeah.
And I would assume, Marcus, like that this is going to be a thing where it's not the XFL. Like it's not going to drop down to 3 million next week. It's probably going to increase. Jesse, you starting off with Dennis Rodman's episode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'll. It's a good question. I think that the ending will probably have a bigger number, but there's already a bit of a drop between one and two, so I'm not sure what the drop is between two and three. But I mean, yeah, it's still the most watched documentary in ESPN history, so that's still, you know, for ESPN, that's a huge one.
I mean, that's until, you know, 10 years from now when we're stuck in another pandemic and that LeBron documentary come out, though.
Yeah, could you imagine?
We're going to see who got the GOAT documentary, Marcus.
10 chapters of LeBron. I don't know if that's going to be. That's interesting.
If Michael only wins one Emmy off of this and LeBron wins 10 Emmys off of his documentary, does that add up in the trophy case?
It might, yeah.
So, you know, Mike got 7 trophies all together with the 6 titles and the 1 Emmy. LeBron got 13 with the 10 Emmys and the 3 titles. So, somewhere Jermaine is like yelling at his podcast, like, that's not how it works.
Bulls fan, Jermaine. I forgot about Jermaine.
Yo, this might be the best moment for Jermaine since the Cubs won the World Series. This is like the biggest moment for Chicago in years.
Might be.
Y'all get a whole month to yourself.
Yep.
But yeah, back to the music thing, Marcus. Like, I think it is in concept. It's a good idea, but like, if you can't do it right, why even do it?
Yeah. So essentially what happened Saturday was, there is an echo coming from Teddy Riley, who we found out later on that he was trying to broadcast this thing on his website as well. And I think that was the cause of the echo, because he had his audio coming back in through his computer.
Yes, for all those subscribers to TeddyRiley.com.
Yes. And instead of just, you know, playing track for track, Teddy was trying to perform his tracks with a full sort of band setup.
Yes.
I would hope the people who were in this room were related to him, because social distancing was not taking place. I mean, this room was packed of people, no mask on, just like.
I think I saw Dak Prescott back there.
Business as usual. Meanwhile, Babyface is at home by himself. Babyface, by the way, who beat COVID-19, who recovered from this. So yeah, it was a mess. They tried to get it going, and then about 20 minutes in, they said, "All right, let's restart. Let's try again."
Yeah,
and restarted it track for track, and then same issues came up with the echo, and decided to end it. Babyface just walked out essentially, and he said, "I'm going back to the back," and. Put out a video later on that night explaining what happened, and that, you know, he wanted to do it right and apologized. And so now it's all set for this evening at 8 p.m. Eastern. They're going to try it again for, I think, the third time.
Will you be watching?
Yes, of course. Come on. Watching Raw or watching this? I'm watching this.
Look, this. Somebody's going to make a documentary about this.
Yes.
Teddy versus Face. Interview all the people that was in Teddy's apartment, Teddy's house. I don't know why he just wouldn't turn down the volume on the laptop.
Yeah.
I kept telling him, but I said, Teddy, do you need me to turn the laptop off? He just kept saying, yep, yep. That's a Teddy Riley joke that only people of a certain age will get, Marcus.
Over 40.
Over 40. Look, you laugh too. Don't act like
Over 35. Over 35.
That's what I'm saying. Don't act like you above this Teddy Riley lifestyle. You remember Teddy's Jam.
Yeah.
But I think like that's a good idea though. Now you got me thinking, because somebody's got to be smart enough and tech savvy enough to develop something that we can do like a full tournament. Like we couldn't have March Madness. So like let's have our music tournament, like the hip hop bracket. I like what you're saying, the R&B bracket. Hell, if you want to do like throw some wild cards in there, like what's Elton John doing right now? Get Elton John in the tournament.
Well, that's what I'm waiting for, is a non-black person to dive into this, whether it's a rock person or just another genre, just to see what that is like. I mean, whether it's either
who'll be the first.
Yo, could you imagine Timberlake doing this?
Ooh, Justin JT Essence versus hits. Look, JT versus Lady Gaga, book it. Book it. Because you know Gaga be down for that.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Justin Timberlake, besides getting residuals from this stupid troll movie?
Timberlake was in this documentary, by the way.
In the Michael Jordan documentary?
Yeah.
Why?
I forgot why. I could have sworn he was in this. Did I write his name down? Let me see. I could have sworn he's in this for.
Did NSYNC do something with the Bulls?
No. Let's see.
Is he a part owner of the Hornets?
Here we go. So Carmen Electra's in it for obvious reasons with Robin.
Yeah, Robin.
Timberlake. I guess because he's the Grizzlies connection.
Huh.
Because he's part of...
Look, that's very flimsy, Justin Timberlake.
It's very... But it's very short. It's like maybe one scene.
Maybe he's friends with the director.
Maybe. Or friends with Jordan.
Like... Yeah, I can't see Jordan and Timberlake hanging out. Does Timberlake get to go to the owners' meetings if he's a part owner?
He might.
That's who I want to see. Is Cuban in this? Is Cuban in the documentary?
No.
Because you know how like WWE does table for three?
Mm-hmm.
I like to see like an NBA owner's table for three with Michael Jordan, Mark Cuban, and your boy from the Rockets. It used to be UFC. Was it Lorenzo Fertitta? Or was it the other Fertitta?
Or is it...
Is it Tillman Fertitta?
Tillman Fertitta is the Rockets.
Okay, so Tillman, Mark Cuban, and Michael Jordan, table for three. Just the stories that would come from that dinner. Just make sure Michael got his cup filled up.
Now it's in the butt for me. Why Timberlake? I didn't write Timberlake's cameo down on my notes. So whatever it was, it wasn't.
That just seems odd. Just random.
Maybe it was around the Jordan sneaker conversation. I don't know. I can't remember.
Okay. But. So they do a section on the sneakers.
Yeah, they talked about how Jordan ended up at Nike and that whole process. Yeah.
Scoop Jackson in it.
Scoop is not in it. And I'm surprised Scoop wasn't
in it. Oh, man. Like, you got to put Scoop in it.
No, Scoop is not in it. I mean, Wilbon, of course, Aldridge.
Yes, yes.
Adonde. But, yeah, no Scoop.
No Scoop. Damn. Yeah, Scoop Jackson. Shout out to Scoop. Is he still doing stuff with ESPN?
That I don't know. He's still around, though.
I'll say, yeah, like... That's a very specific like type of basketball fan. Like, if you down with Scoop Jackson, that means at one time in your life you probably subscribed to Slam Magazine.
Yep.
Like it's a certain type, like an urban centered basketball fan that's out here following Scoop Jackson.
Wow. Wow, Scoop is 56.
Are you? Wow. Shout out to Scoop, man. I always like seeing Scoop pop up on TV talking about basketball. Shout out to Scoop.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think before we get out of here, anybody else key from that time frame that would have been in the documentary? Do they talk to Shaq?
No Shaq.
Okay.
Let's see. Worthy, Roy Williams, Patrick Ewing, Isaiah Thomas, Pat Riley, Magic, Bill Clinton, Larry Bird, Charles Oakley, Gary Payton, Bill Kobe Clinton. Bryant. Clinton was in the first one. Clinton was in the second one talking about Pippen.
That's right. Yeah. Because Obama was in there as well.
Yeah.
Talking about Jordan in the first one.
Glenn Rice, Charles Barkley. Yeah, no Shaq.
Okay. Yeah, this is going to be fun. Like, this is, and spoiler alert, this is going to be the podcast for the next month.
Yes, that's 5 weeks.
Shout out to ESPN for giving us content.
Here's your OJ answer, by the way. It's OJ okay. was, the first part was on ABC, and it did 3.4 million.
Okay.
So MJ
that was on ABC.
Yeah. So MJ almost did double that on ESPN.
Wow. MJ killed OJ. that's what you gonna give me?
Not touching that one.
Not touching that. But yeah. Like I think this is what you're gonna be. I was gonna say stuck with, but this is what you're gonna be blessed with for the next month.
Yes.
Dear listeners, we're going to be talking about this Last Dance documentary plus whatever else comes up. And I'm thankful that we had the documentary, Marcus, because I didn't feel like if we didn't talk about this week, we would have been sitting here talking about Heath Slater for an hour. And I'm not trying to do that.
Yeah. Did you have any thoughts about the layoffs?
Just that, I'm going to say this without putting you over in this mix, Marcus. So let me put the disclaimer out. This is Nate Milton saying this. I think it's a bad look because the contracts that were cut at the end of the day probably aren't going to equal. Like, it's not going to make that big a difference. And so I think with the uncertainty right now, if you're this business, yes, it sucks that you're paying these people, that you're not getting all the value out of these people, but you can absorb the hit for what, 20 people? Was it 20 or 30 people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. Like, you can, at least for the next couple months till we figure out what we're doing as a country. Because the president still ain't figured out what the hell we're doing in terms of reopening, quote unquote, the country. So I thought it was a bad look, man. Just to, because it's not like, it'd be one thing if, this for a normal time, right? And you could go work for AEW or New Japan. But can't nobody go nowhere to work now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, it was... the timing of it was a little suspect, considering everything that went on last week with the Super PAC in Florida and then WWE getting dragged for... doing their tapings, which I thought the blame was a little much in the sense of like this company's been wrestling the last month and now people have finally discovered what they've been doing. Yeah.
And to be fair, like AEW's doing it too, and we love AEW, but they probably shouldn't be taping right now either.
Yeah, and it's not just, it's all sports is now deemed essential in Florida. And I think that's the bigger story, is that we're going to maybe see other sports pop up in Florida first because they have the green light. Not so much that wrestling's taping. I don't care about that. I care about the fact that we could see NASCAR try to do something. We could see boxing.
Spring training.
Yeah. So, but that got swept away in this whole, oh, look, it's the wrestling thing back in the news for being, essential.
Right.
So, yeah, that's why I thought the timing of it was a little suspect, and all of a sudden now we're strapped for cash and we need to cut the roster.
Right.
And also, it sort of took him out the headlines for that other story and introduced him to this new angle where, you know, now that this company that's hurting. So that's a bit suspect to me, but
yeah. And then that's I get it that they have shareholders, but I think shareholders would understand, you know, carrying that extra expense for another month or two till we figure out what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think, like, if they didn't cut these people, I don't think somebody would be in the boardroom just cussing Vince out. Like, why didn't you get rid of those sons of bitches? Like, nah, most people, but there are some people that don't understand and they out here protesting right now, Marcus Vandenberg, in these streets. But most people understand that we're going through something right now and you need to give businesses and people a bit of leeway.
Speaking of that, your state of Georgia, have you seen this yet?
What's going on in Georgia?
Starting Friday, you can go get your haircut in Florida. In Georgia, excuse me.
Uh-oh.
they are going to reopen the state starting Friday. Restaurants, theaters, salons.
Here's the thing, Marcus, because before this, like all the people, like the great majority of the people protesting, we know what they look like. I ain't got to say it. But the trap is when they open up the barbershop and the beauty salon. So let me say, Black America, don't fall for the okie doke. Don't do it.
I mean, how well do you know your barber? That's what it comes down to. Do you trust your barber?
Yes. Yeah. Do you trust your barber? And if you're a barber, do you trust some of your clients?
That is a good point. That is a compliment. Like,
if I'm a barber, they'll be like, nah, I can't see you till this is over, dog.
How bad do you
want I know how
money?
You live.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is because up until this point, Marcus, we know what the opposition has looked like to lockdown. But now I feel like they dangling that carrot out. People got these stimulus checks. They ready to get their hair lined up. Like, don't fall for it.
Yeah, we'll see how this goes in the South.
Yeah. Killer Mike, keep your barbershop closed.
Open it up. Do some testing.
You see all the black people protesting outside of Phillips Arena. Open up the barbershop.
You should do. You get your cut and you get a test.
That's actually not a bad idea. There, we got to test you. Test and then cut.
Yeah.
Yep. Because if you coming up with a fever, you got to go.
Yeah. And get a killer mask on the way out too.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let me holler at Killer Mike on social media.
Yes. So what were you talking about before this Georgia stuff happened?
We were wrapping up on WWE, where I was like, the board would understand if you carried an extra expense for a month or two just to get through this.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, this will probably maybe in some of these contracts where it felt like they're assigning people just to keep them as opposed to actually using them. And I don't say it backfired on them, but it, you know,
I mean, like this point. There is a legitimate point to be like the roster was bloated, right? Like they needed to get rid of people. It's just when you did it, like,
and it's
like,
still
now you want to do it.
The people who they got rid of were mostly people not on television.
Yeah, you're right.
Even Rusev. Rusev hasn't been around since when?
Since the Lashley stuff, which is like before WrestleMania.
Yeah, that was
so,
the
what, 2 months?
Either end of last year or early this year. That's when it all
Yeah, at best, ended. It's so, January.
Yeah. So, when you factor in that some of these talent are getting 5-year deal, I would be pissed if I signed this 5-year deal thinking this is year one of five, and then you find out a few months later that the deal is up. And I don't know like how these contracts worked, if they're obligated to pay out, or they, and most cases where if you have a deal and you get cut, you can get paid out if you do not work in the same profession. So you can sit home and get paid, which for most people, that's just not going to happen. So therefore, you forfeit the money once you decide to get back into working with another company or another outlet. So
we've got almost like a mandated stay at home. So yeah. It actually might work in their favor.
Yeah, but if you're someone like Mike and Maria who just signed both 5-year deals individually,
yeah.
I mean, that would feel some kind of way, especially with, you know, kids involved and stuff. So
hey, look, Scottie Pippen in the corner. Don't sign it. Don't sign it. Yeah. Scottie's like, even I feel bad for y'all.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's a bad look, man. Like it's because here's the thing, and again, not to put all the blame on the WWE, because other businesses, not even wrestling, but like other businesses are doing this too. And it's like, but in particular with the WWE, like they'll have the conference call, you know, with the quarterly earnings. And it'd be like, mm-hmm. you know, we did this and we made so much money and the network subscriptions are through the roof and this and that, but you can't keep these people on for an extra 2 months. Like it doesn't add up.
And you know what their sort of incomes or what their profits are going to be for this year. So you know what they're making.
Right.
So that's where I think that's the bigger issue is like, I get you're not running shows in front of fans and you missed out on WrestleMania. I get all that, but
y'all ain't living check to check.
No, you're not. You're not. So that's where it's not a good look, but really it should be
Vince surprised. Vince is like, I would have kept you, Leo Rush, but I ain't get that stimulus check yet.
Yeah. We didn't talk about the XFL, but yeah, that also happened last week too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they took a bath on that one.
Yeah.
Which, again, like, okay, I guess we can do this before we leave, Marcus, since you brought it up. Like, what did you make of XFL 2020? Because I have to say, I didn't hate it, which is probably more than I would have thought going into it.
I didn't hate it, but I was not watching it.
Mm.
It did not offend me, but it also did not get me to watch. And I think that was the problem. There was no reason to watch this stuff.
Right. It was like you took away all of the sideshow stuff, which made the football better, but mm-hmm. it made the actual TV broadcast less interesting, I think.
Yeah.
So like, I think it became regional too. Like, I think there were some spots where it was catching on. Like, I think like DC, like the DC fans were getting into it. But I know like your team in LA, it wasn't hitting.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the names of people who really stood out,
there's a. Because one guy got signed already, didn't he? The quarterback.
Where am I was it PJ? His name. Yeah, PJ Walker.
PJ Walker.
Was it PJ Walker?
We just making up names. Tyrone Jackson.
No, it's PJ Walker. Phillip Walker.
PJ Walker. So he got signed.
And there's a couple other guys I saw that were signed by teams, but
yeah, because I follow the Defenders on Twitter because I've been a lifelong DC Defenders fan, Marcus Vandenberg, ever since I can remember, and like they had three or four people on the defense that got signed, so like I could see maybe not a great amount of these guys, but maybe 10-15% of the players find their way to NFL roster.
Maybe. I mean, I'm. You mentioned
Cardale Jones got to get another shot with somebody.
No, he doesn't.
Now.
No, he doesn't.
Cardale Jones, leader of the DC Defenders, a candidate for XFL MVP, Marcus Vandenberg.
Was he that good?
I feel about the DC Defenders the way people in Montreal felt about the Expos during the strike year. Like, this could have been our year, they took it away from us.
Don't you dare compare yourselves to the Montreal Expos.
They took it away from us, Marcus. We were going to the championship.
As a fake Canadian, Nate, I'm offended by that comment.
I mean, Vladimir Guerrero and Cardale Jones. Same difference.
Yeah, pretty much.
Same guy. But yeah, like I knew they were in trouble, Marcus, just because of the ratings and the like attendance in some cities. But I thought, like, had they not had to cease operations because of coronavirus, I think they maybe could have squeaked that one more season.
So finish this one and then another one that year?
And then, yeah, and then that would have been it. I think they could have squeaked that one more. Because there was nothing.
That'd have been tough. I think
it would have been tough, but I think with the first XFL, it got to a point where, yeah, you had the sideshow stuff, but it got to a point where it just became embarrassing. Like the, I'm thinking of like the locker room skit, stuff like that. They would like the league itself, I don't think, did anything to embarrass themselves this time around.
No, but I think without some type of official partnership with the NFL where it's, you know, this is like the NFL feeder league or developmental league. Yep.
I think that would have been a good step. Either that or Marcus, hear me out. You want a gimmick, you know? The big thing in wrestling, Vince knows, is the surprise return. You want to pop ratings in season two of the XFL? Colin Kaepernick's back.
I think there was, at one point, some discussions, but the money, you know, Cap's not coming back to play for six figures, so.
Cap's not Scottie Pippen.
No.
But yeah, I think overall, Marcus, like it was a good effort. I'll give him that. Like it didn't hit like they wanted it to hit or probably needed it to hit from a bottom line standpoint.
They didn't embarrass themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, and they did better than the damn the AF.
The AF. Like
they did better than the AF. So.
Well, they didn't last as long as the AF, but they at least, you know, when they did play, it was better.
Yes. So do you think this is it? Like, not for the XFL, because the XFL is done. But, like, do you think this is it for alternative football leagues for a while?
Yeah, this is it. Unless the NFL decides to create one themselves. Yeah, this is it.
Right. Yeah, which, to me, like, that would be the move. Like, if I'm trying to think of who's got money. Oh, this would be petty. You talked about Michael Jordan being petty. This would be the time for your man Ted Turner to get back in the game, call up Roger Goodell, and start a league that would be a feeder system, like you said, for the NFL, just to spite Vince McMahon.
Ted Turner's still alive. I always have to remind myself, Ted's still.
Yes, I think he's living in Florida now.
Ted's still ticking.
So stay away from the beach, Ted.
Yes,
stay off the beach.
Stay at home.
Yeah, Ted Turner's still kicking.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I think you're right. And unless there's a situation where you've got like a G League or something like that, where the league can sustain losses, because whatever league it is, they're gonna take losses that first season, probably the first two seasons, from a financial standpoint.
You mentioned the G League. No one watches the G League. Like, the G League's purpose is not to get TV ratings. G League's purpose.
You mean you don't watch G League on the NBA package, Marcus Vandenberg?
No, I do not. No, no one
does.
You
don't watch who's the LA G League team? The Santa Barbara Speeders?
The LA. I don't know. No, South Bay Lakers.
The South Bay Lakers?
Yeah.
You're not signed up for all the South Bay Lakers games?
No. I mean, they're on TV and I don't watch them, but. To that point, the G League now, with Jalen Green going to the G League, who was one of the top high school recruits of this year's class. And there's also another kid who decommitted from Michigan to go to the G League. I do think the G League next year will be, if there is a next year, will be interesting to watch because we'll have actual name value attached to this league. And essentially on the same team, too, so. But yeah, that's not the purpose of the G League. The G League is strictly to help these teams develop players. So if the NFL wants to do something similar and not worry about ratings, and by all means, they can do it. But I think they want people to actually watch football.
I think people would watch it, though, given that it's got the NFL brand to it, though. Because there's something about that shield that would make people watch stuff that they normally wouldn't watch.
If they set it up like
this team is tied to that team and this is the stars of your future and did that whole spiel. I think NFL fans would watch it.
But you would need actual stars to be, or at least prospects to be involved. And like,
yeah.
You need someone to, and this would never happen, but you need someone to skip playing college football and going straight into this developmental league, like a Jalen Green. And they would, you know, spend their time developing against adults, essentially. If you don't have that, you're not going to watch like the fourth string running back get better. Like that's not worth your time. Especially if you were a true developmental lead, you would probably have to run your games with the NFL. Like it wouldn't make sense really to do it February through April when there's no games going on either.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's why the G League works, because G League is the minor leagues. It's baseball, the minor leagues. It's the same time. So
yeah.
If a guy does get hurt, you can go to your developmental league and bring someone up. It's basically taking the practice squad and putting that into an actual league.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. So, like, yeah, so RIP to the XFL. In my mind, the DC Defenders won the 2020 championship. I think I might place an, if XFL shop still exists, I might place an order this weekend.
That's a big if.
Oh, they might be having a going out of business sale. This might be the perfect time to go to XFL.com.
Let's see if that's still.
Get you a hot Defenders jersey for 80% off.
All right, there is a shop.
Okay.
All sales are final. No returns or exchanges will be accepted. All right.
Okay, what's the prices on these jerseys? They gotta be cutting them down.
DC Defenders. Oh my god. They're selling the game jerseys still for
$225.
$225? Yeah.
Wow. You ain't got enough money from Mike and Maria Kanellis, though. Okay.
Wow.
Look, if you said 25, I would have placed my order right now.
The clearance section, they have like sweaters that were originally $55 that are now $47. This isn't much of a clearance. This is... Yeah, come on.
The whole site should be clearance.
It should be. Like, who's... This is pathetic.
Hey, damn. That's how it is, Vince?
Yeah.
Somebody need to protest this website.
I know.
Hey, damn. Like, even if you had said 50, Marcus, I would have considered it.
It's a nice jersey. It's a red jersey.
Yeah, I like the design, but just $225
for a jersey that is not even attached to like a Nike or a Reebok or Adidas. Like, I don't know who made this jersey because
Shane.
Yeah,
Shane and his kids made it in the backyard.
And on top of that, you don't have a number. You don't have a number choice. You only have 20. It appears.
You can't customize it.
No. No. So you can't put your name on it. It's 20 with no name on the back. This is terrible. The replica jersey, though, you can get that for $89 if you want to go a little cheaper. And we'll end it on this note, Nate. So the replica jersey, there are 5 sizes that are sold out.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to guess those sizes?
I would imagine most of them have an X in front of them.
XL, double XL, triple XL, 4XL, and 5XL, all sold out.
Damn, 5XL.
Yeah. Small, medium, large. You're in business.
Ain't no XFL fans that fit that description.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's terrible. Like, yeah. That's the thing, Marcus. I was willing to today. Not even for a bit for the podcast. I was willing to put some money on the XFL site if it was a reasonable price.
No,
but you telling me $200 and I can't customize it?
Yeah. Well, we'll
and that's not even counting shipping.
We'll check back after the pandemic to see where we're at.
Yeah. Maybe they'll give us a sale around SummerSlam.
Yeah.
All jerseys must go. So, Marcus Vandenberg, let's end it here. This was our episode this week, our first episode in our continuing series, recapping the events of the ESPN/Netflix documentary series, The Last Dance. So, Marcus Vandenberg, where can people find you on social media and let you know that? Trying to think of a rant. We already named like all the random bulls. Okay, I got one that we didn't name. Where can people find you on social media to let you know that Jack Haley is their favorite Chicago Bull of all time?
Jack Haley. You can find me on social media at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Yeah, he was like Rodman's assistant. Like yes, everywhere he Rodman was. Went, he'd go. So, you can find me on Twitter, N8, MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/KingsOfSport. Post Wrestling. There's a new shirt up this month at Post Wrestling for the Rocky Maivia Picture Show. They got it in black, they got it in white, and I'm not going to say it's cheap, I'm going to say it's affordable, but let's just say for the price of 10 of my shirts, you can get one XFL jersey that you can't customize.
Yes.
So, yes, if you're a fan of the podcast or a fan of Rocky Horror or the fan of The Rock, you know, check out the Post Wrestling store and pick up a shirt today.
Have you tweeted the shirt to The Rock yet?
I have no response yet.
Okay. No, like cease and desist either. So that's good.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if he likes it, he hates it, or if he's talking with his legal team right now.
What if you put a mask on The Rock in the shirt?
That's how we get around copyright.
Yes.
Fair use. Shout out. Who is the guy? My man Robert. Shout out to Robert. I'm blanking on the brother's last name, but he did the design and him and Way got everything hooked up at the website. So yeah, check it out. Store.postwrestling.com and get you a Rocky Maivia Picture Show shirt, Marcus. Like, I hear so far sales have been pretty good, at least from what I've seen.
Has your shirt arrived yet?
No, we don't have the 5XL in stock.
Mm.
Actually, look, I know we're joking here, but I think I said it on Jenny's podcast. I was on the Jenny position a couple weeks ago, and they were like, you know, what are you doing during this pandemic, whatever, during quarantine? And my goal, I said, Marcus, my goal is by the time we get through with this, I'm going to come out, like, you know, people talk about getting their beach body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get my quarantine body. Like, I'm trying to drop like 25, 30 pounds. During this quarantine, like my here for, let's just say all of our sisters out here who are going to be thirsty, and I want to be ready.
Man, the thirst on social media. Wow.
Yo, did you see the Wrestling Twitter After Dark deal last week, Marcus?
I saw it.
People losing their damn minds. This is how I know a lot of people ain't never been broke before. Like and have had to stay inside.
Yeah, this is
like y'all are losing your mind.
It's only been a month, people. Come on.
Yeah, I'm seeing the thirst market, so I'm trying to be ready. I'm like Jordan. When it's game time, I want to be ready to put up 63. and on that note, brother. We're gonna call it a week. Thank you for checking out the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you're on the Patreon, Marcus and I, we are back with our first video edition in a while. But yeah, this is gonna be fun. Looking forward to this next month of shows, brother. Be safe.
Yes, you too.
Don't get fooled. I know you got that good hair. Don't get tricked into going to the barbershops if they open up in LA.
I need a haircut bad, man. This is
Yeah, your lovely wife don't know how to work some clippers, Marcus?
No, she does not. Even if she did, I,
yo, come
no.
out, You come out looking like Killmonger with just one side.
Yeah, no, we'll have to ride this thing out.
Yes. We're going to see how good that hair really is by the end of this documentary series.
Yes.
Oh, man. But yes, yes. So stay safe, brother, and look forward to talking to you next week, man.
You too, man.
All right. So, for Marcus, I am the Godfather. Let's see. How are we going to go out this week? Let's see. For Marcus, I'm Nate. Somebody get MJ a refill. Because you've been down with the king.
His face in the sand, not the last mafioso, I'm a MC cop, make it say go LL and do the what. If you think you can outrun me, yeah boy I bet, cause I ain't met a motherfucker who can do that yet. Trendsetter, I'm better, my rhymes are good, I got a gold name plate that says I wish you would. And when battle begins, then I gotta join in, and before my rhyme is over, you know I'ma win. Cool J has arrived, so you better make way. Ask anybody in the crowd, they say the kid don't play. You don't try to battle me no more. Got concrete rhymes, been rapping for 10 years. And even when I'm bragging, I'm being sincere. MC can't win, I make them rust like tin. They call me Jaws, my hat is like a shark's fin. Because I'm bad as can be, got my voice on wax. Some brothers think he's making records, now he must have relaxed. I couldn't, I shouldn't, and it'll stay that way. The best rapper you've heard is LL Cool J. Kamikaze, take a look at what I've done. Used to rock in my basement, now I'm number one. And you're out on time, never standing online. You wanna try me? First you better learn how to rhyme. I'm the pinnacle, that means I reign supreme. And I'm notorious, I'll crush you like a jelly bean. I'm bad.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat. Cause that's what I do when I get it done so I can do it. Yeah!